Welcome to Kidlit Happy Hour. Grab a drink, cozy up,
and explore storytelling with creative minds inside children's publishing and beyond.
Wouldn't it be better if you start, then I start, then you talk about your book, then I talk about my book, and then we do a little 1, 2, 3, 4?
No, because I can just really fast smush my book into whatever I say.
You're so annoying. Demanding. You're so stubborn. All right. I'm so happy to be talking to you, Joanna. I don't mean it passive aggressively. I'm thrilled to be talking to you.
Yes, you are.
Hi, I love you. How are you? Mm-hmm.
Carry on. Answer my question.
Hi, Joanna. How are things in my world? Well, first and most importantly, I woke up to the pitter-patter of my 5-year-old's little feet running in the room saying, Mom, it's snowing. And we threw open the blinds. I don't know if one throws open blinds. Open the shutters. And it was pouring snow here in Virginia. And it was, yeah, I never grew up with that. I think I can remember like 2 or 3 snow days in Texas. And so this is delightful. And Tabitha's home. He gets 10 days off from work, having not been off from work since July.
Okay, give us like a picture of what not being off from work looks like so we can appreciate what 10 days off means.
So I feel like we've talked about this a few times on different episodes. But okay, husband of mine is a football coach. And during the football season, and I think every staff does it a little bit differently, but his staff works 7 days a week. So leaves around 5 a.m. and gets back some nights at 2 a.m, some nights at midnight. And then one night a week, he gets back to see the kids. So we've gone since July with him getting like one-ish nights, hours that he can hang out with the kiddos, which is truly torture. And we're going to have to reassess our life after this past season. But it's over now and he gets 10 glorious days off. And so
tell us like a few like things you're going to do. Are you that you?
Well, the second we're done here, I'm going to go make a snow angel. Yes. In the snow. And then on Tuesday night, we are going to go, drum roll, please,
yes,
on an overnight date.
Oh my gosh.
We've been on like a date, I think 3 times in 2023 total, we counted. And we're going to be able to go into the city. And we're going to have dinner at Liz Kleinrock's husband's restaurant called Amparo Fondita, which just got written up in the Washington Post.
The best new Mexican restaurant.
Yes. Best new Mexican restaurant in DC. Just brilliant. Christian is wonderful. And he's the chef. So anyway, we're going to go there and support them and just kind of like get lost, get loose and weird and roll around DC. Cannot wait. But other than that, we're just soaking up every millisecond with the kids.
I'm going to say that I'm so happy about these 10 days. That I have a physical sense of relief in my body because you get to be together. And I can't imagine what that feels. So I'm just so happy.
There have been all these moments. This sounds so dramatic, but it's like, I keep looking at Tala, like from he'll be holding her. And I'm like, I've never looked at her from this distance. Or I've rarely looked at her from this distance where he's holding her and I'm getting to ogle her. You know, I'm normally looking straight down at her. I'm rocking her. Just like a physical space of getting to be around our kids differently and so much easier for joy to wash over me in those moments. So that's all felt really, really good. So leaning into that.
I love that so much.
Joanna,
what have I been doing? I cut you off on your question.
I love it. You're like, fine, whatever.
Well, last week, I just talked about how it was a blur, but it really was a lovely blur. December, it was so much family time. I had a lot of cousins who were in town, and we had just like tons of, I had, you know, people over for Christmas, and then people over who had like an impromptu accidental New Year's situation.
You cooked?
I cooked a lot. So I cooked so much. I cooked New Year's. I cooked Christmas. And then I went to my brother's, and I got to meet my nephew. He's like 9 weeks old. He is a little squish ball.
And he's the biggest boss squish.
He's the cutest. He's my first nephew. And I'm just obsessed with him. So it was really nice. We got to go spend time at my brother's inn, which is in upstate New York called the Mountain Brook Inn. If you are looking for a place to have a retreat or a weekend away, highly recommend. They are the best. And then we got kind of snowed in. So we got to stay a few extra days. Loved having all that family time. Did tons of cooking. I'm tired of cooking. It's not my favorite thing. I really like eating. But anyways, that was wonderful. So life has felt really good and getting back into the swing of real life. I can't believe January is half over.
I'm like, what? I saw a commercial because it's truly shameful the amount of commercials our kids have consumed just by watching football games. And I do this thing. It's like the only way I can survive it because, again, complicated. We can talk about this another time. But like football, the NFL, toxic. We know this. Many things about it are toxic. Many things are actually beautiful. And I imagine some will roll their eyes at that. But one part of them not seeing their dad is on the weekend, they can watch some football games. And so that helps them feel connected to dad's teams and whatever. They consume more commercials than is healthy or reasonable. And so I'm trying to channel my media literacy class I took in high school And so anytime a commercial comes on, they know that they're going to be asked, what are they trying to sell you? How are they trying to manipulate you? And why do you think it might work for you or not? And so they'll be like, oh, beer. They make it look like your family's happier if there's beer around. I'm too young to drink beer. It won't work on me. Or like trying so hard to make something positive of it. But the reality is like they're just getting force-fed progressive commercials and Popeyes, and that there's just like nothing positive.
Well, I totally stole that from you, because I'll do that with my kids too. It's been really funny. I'm like, what method of persuasion are they using?
I mean, I the other night was telling them how much I was craving a McFlurry, and Manu goes like, ooh, they got you. Ooh. And I was like, dang it. I did see a McDonald's commercial today.
As long as you're aware that it's happening.
Exactly. As long as you're aware, it's fine. Get that extra insurance for your car bundle. Home and auto.
Then grab a McFlurry on the way.
Okay. Sorry to interrupt
you. No, you're not interrupting.
Okay. I feel like there's something else I would argue that is noteworthy that's happening today.
My book was released today. Hooray, everyone. Eyes That Weave the World's Wonders. Written with Liz Kleinrock, illustrated by Zung Ho. Super, super proud of this book. It's about a young Korean transracial adoptee adopted into a white family and her journey of learning her own power of connection and wonder in the world. And if you haven't ordered it yet, would appreciate an order. We have stickers and bookmarks for people who pre-order. And I'm just super excited. We have a launch event.
Wait, just to clarify, that means if you ordered the book prior to today or this week, is that right?
Through January 31st. We just did it through the end of the month.
Okay, then what you need to do is go to Joe's Instagram or Liz's Instagram and click on the link in their bio, and you can upload your proof of purchase and they will send you the stickers.
Thank you for filling all those important details. And launch events. There is one tonight in Los Altos through Linden Tree at 5 p.m. And then I will post on my Instagram more. I'll be in the D.C. area for a couple events. To Minnesota for an event. So as soon as I have more details, I will share.
It's really out in the world. Today is the day. It's a book birthday. And every other book birthday, when I used to live down the road from you, every time one of your books would come out into the world, we would sneak over to your house and decorate your front door with posters and streamers and funfetti and treats. And it breaks my heart a bit that we cannot be there in person today, but we are screaming today for you and for everyone on the team that made this book possible. I cannot wait to see what the world thinks of it.
I really love those posters. Thank you. I really wish that you could be here too. But I'm going to be there soon, so it'll be work. Great. Tell us about your book, because your book is out not in 6 weeks, Caroline.
I told Joe, we were checking in before this intro. I'm like, Joe, don't ask about my book. I have weeks and weeks, like 6 to 8 weeks, talk about it. She's like, honey, sweet girl, your book's coming out in 3 weeks. I was like, oh. So just the quick, it's called Where is Poppy? If you pre-order through Politics and Prose in DC, then they will automatically send you stickers and a bookmark and a signed book. But we don't have time. We got to get to Jerry Craft. Just saying Jerry Craft's name got me all buzzy, because I cannot believe the Jerry Craft talked to us months ago. But it's finally the day we get to share that. You two have the most ridiculous dynamic because you got to know each other. And so if you notice them truly just ribbing each other the whole time,
like, y'all are, you would be so annoying. But
it was a smile annoying, not the eye roll annoying. Sure. Most of the
Okay, well, I adore Jerry and I'm so excited. We all get to learn from him. So the backstory here is that Jerry Craft has a whole set of swag, of New Kid swag, hats, vests, jackets, sweaters, whatever, all the things. And that's what he is always at conferences wearing. And I assumed he'd be wearing that too. So I told Caroline we had to wear New Kid swag. And so we taped New Kid on our hoodies, like on a piece of paper with a big piece of tape. And then I also wore a hat and I taped New Kid. But for the record, I drew really pretty amazing picture of New Kid. And then I put it on my hat as well. So I look ridiculous, but I was trying to be like Jerry.
I love how you're saying we. Doing it. I absolutely did not participate.
Was it just me?
It was just you. You're like, Karen, it'll be so funny. I'm like, no, it's Jerry Craft, A, just period. B, I've never met the man. C, like, no, make your own bed. This is on you. I'm not going down with the ship. No.
In my head, we both did it, but apparently it was me.
It was so funny. Okay. So anyway, without further ado.
Enjoy.
Enjoy, y'all. Well, I think we're officially tech. Okay. Fine.
I just need Jerry to know, it says it's your fault that the live video will return when their internet improves. It's working fine for Caroline.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of think it's a Joanna problem.
I do.
We're just going to go with it.
I'm going to get a shirt that says, I kind of think it's a Joanna problem.
Will you make me one, please?
As long as it looks as good as the ones I made right now.
Yeah.
I knew I'd love Jerry. I read all your books and I love every single one, but
cool.
I figured you'd be even more wonderful in person. Anyone who can rib Joanna is a friend of mine.
Okay, Jerry, we're going to jump in with the bio. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a really good one because I wrote it.
It's a good bio.
We're ready. Hey, Jerry, we're so excited you're here. Well, at least one of us is. I'm not the one who's talking. So,
And not me either.
Okay, so no one has really heard of this guy named Jerry Craft.
Nope.
Because his work isn't that impressive. We all felt a little bad for him, so we invited him on our podcast. Lucky him.
Did Club Alexander know this?
He is the New York Times bestselling author, whatever, and illustrator of many books for kids, including graphic novels New Kid and Class Act. New Kid was the first graphic novel to win the Newbery Medal and the only book in history.
History.
Say that
history,
again. History. In all of history.
Yeah, the echo. History.
From the beginning
history.
Of time. From the beginning of time. Time. To win the Newbery, the Kirkus Prize, and the Coretta Scott King Author Award. But we can't say that too many times because it will go to his head. He has been a copywriter, a cartoonist, and a creator of the beloved comic strip Mama's Boys. And he's even been an editorial director at Sports Illustrated. He happens to be one of my favorite people to see at a conference, and I almost fainted the first time I saw him holding one of my books in line to get it signed. Despite all the ribbing, I think he's one of the nicest people ever. He's one of my faves. So really, actually, welcome, Jerry.
Well, thank you. And I won't tell anyone about how I stood online to get your book and then you drew on my face in Sharpie. And then I had to go around the rest of the conference with Sharpie on my face.
You deserved it. Anyways, we're here. Welcome. Happy hour.
Jerry, welcome to Kidlet Happy Hour. And because we are, of course, at a happy hour, we must start by asking, what are you drinking today?
So I normally start my day with whatever fruit and vegetables I have. I throw it in my Vitamix. And then I drink a combination of blueberry, mango, spinach, ginger, something like that.
Okay, so that sounds very healthy. What were the vegetables and fruits you put in it today?
Mango, blueberry, pineapple, ginger.
Oh, that actually sounds really good.
That sounds delicious. Yeah, anything with ginger.
Okay, fine. You win. Okay, we're going to jump in with your big question for today.
Okay.
So you are an author, you are an illustrator, you make comics, you do all the things. How do you build a story? Like, what does that mean to you? Let's just start there.
So it's literally building. It's like building a house. I put the framework, right? And then you put the bricks, and then you go back in, you put the sheetrock, and then you paint. You know, I didn't love to read as a kid, but it's amazing that I can read one of the stories that I'm writing 100 times. And I forget everyone's not like that. So like if I show it to like my son, for example, hey, I made a few changes. You want to read it again? It's like, Dad, I just read it. Oh, right. Not everyone is like me. So I will read it. Oh, you know what? Let me punch it up, add some more humor. And then I'll read it. And then like, oh, you know what? I need to expand this character. There's finally a part where it's just like, I think I'm done, which is an amazing feeling to finally be done. But it is really going back in and back in and back in. I like taking a while to do it because I always hear stuff that's relative. Like when I was working on Class Act, I think I was at ALA or North Texas Teen Book Festival. And this is kind of before people recognized me, so I could just sit incognito. This is before the Joannas of the world would meet me and fangirl.
Flock and fangirl. Jerry!
Right, Jerry! Exactly. So I remember a bunch of teachers talking one time, and I'm just sitting kind of off to the side, and they were saying, what happens to those cute little boys that were in sixth grade and now they come into seventh grade and boy, that body odor is like you're working in the stable. And I was like, that's right. Because in my books, I was so focused on emotional growth with Jordan and Liam that I didn't do anything about physical growth, you know? So then I went back in and started it off with Jordan complaining that he was the only one of his friends that didn't stink. He felt like his body wasn't mature, and when does he get his big boy stink? And then how some kids grow over the summer 4 inches. I was a really late sprouter. I got my growth spurt in about 12th grade through college. What? I was 5'4" in like 11th grade. I just,
no way. You're so tall.
So those are the kind of things that as I go around, I'm always listening.
Yes.
And taking in things. And I go, yes, body odor. And then as I put that in, yes. Like that scene with the dad in the beginning of Class Act still makes me giggle because it's just so silly.
When you talk about going through and adding in layers and going back, I'm wondering, do you have a process in terms of approaching a full draft and then coming back to add layers, or is it iterative as you're going?
So what's weird is that I don't have a process. I do whatever I feel like at the time, in a sense. Like when I did New Kid, I just thumbnailed it all. I just went right into sketching. And Class Act was kind of the same thing. So I go to Walmart and buy a 3-ring binder and I start sketching it out. And then, you know, I can move pages. But I found that when I did School Trip, I wrote it as a manuscript.
Wow.
You know, like I was writing a play. And the reason is because it was potentially the final one in the series. I wanted to make sure I answered all the questions.
Yeah.
A lot of authors say, do not go on Goodreads, do not read your reviews. But I always do.
You do.
I do. Even the bad ones.
That's brave.
Like, I don't respond.
Right.
But you feel them, Jerry. I feel like I couldn't. I would just be like.
But I also get some good insight. Like 5-star is great. You know, you wish they were all 5-star. I know, Joanna, you don't know what that's like. But when you get like a 5-star review, you can read some of mine. You'll see.
Okay.
They're really good. A 1-star is someone that knew ahead of time that they were not going to like your book. It's like if they are a vegetarian and then they go into a steakhouse, like why even do that? You know going in, you're not going to like
it. There's nothing for you.
But like the 3-star ones are people who may have specific things. So like when I read Class Act, they said, well, I really liked it, but I thought he was going to address this. I thought he was going to close this storyline. I thought that this character might do this. So I do like reading those. Then I was like, oh, okay. So people really are waiting on whether
George
is going to art school. You know, they really want to know if what Maury's dad is like or what Andy's brother is like, you know? So when I wrote School Trip, I wrote it like a play that says like, Jordan, hi, mom, where do you want to go? Mom, oh, baby, blah, 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 blah. I know that when you put something out there, you can't take it back.
Right.
And people want those questions answered, and especially kids will be like, how come Maury did such and such? I'm like, oh, I never even thought about that. I guess I have to think about that.
That's fascinating. It's amazing how people attach to characters or storylines that you don't even think about when you're writing.
Yeah.
You're so focused on like A, B, and C.
So
before you started sketching and writing, was there a planning process of the story arc? Or is that your planning process? For me, that sounds like the middle. But is there steps before that? And then what comes after?
Well, it's so weird because, all right, so if you've ever heard my stories, you know that I did not like to read as a kid. Mm-hmm. Hated reading books. I didn't have the attention span. I thought they were boring. Just like all the things that you hear kids say, that was me.
Yeah.
So I didn't consider myself a writer because how could I be a writer if I didn't like to read? I knew I liked writing comic strips and my comic books, but I still didn't consider myself a writer. So it's weird to me that the awards that I've gotten have been for writing and not for, like, I won a Newbery, not a Caldecott. You know, as I started writing more and more, and then I would go and do school visits, the English teachers would be like, oh, Mr. Kraft, please, I tell my kids all about when you're writing a story, you start with the exposition and the this and the that. And can you talk about that? And I was like, I don't know about that. I just wrote, you know. But I knew early on when I would talk to editors and they would say, what's your character arc? What's your story arc? What's this? And then I remember someone just saying, don't tell it, show it. And these are all things that I kind of learned one by one, you know, mm-hmm. not in school. And then I just kind of put them all together. And now I do start off with kind of a character arc, story arc. And then I know that the characters should not end the book the same way that they started the book.
Right.
What is it that they want? And then I fight really hard to not do stereotypes. So like Liam, one of the big three in New Kid, is a wealthy kid. I always say growing up, all the rich kids in movies were played by James Spader, who was just the most obnoxious rich kid ever. So I didn't want to do that in the same way that I don't like seeing black stereotypes. Mm-hmm. So I forget the name of the index, but it's something that measures like the female characters.
How often they're speaking
right. speaking to each other.
To each other.
But it can't be about boys.
The Bechdel test.
Yes, that's it.
The movie has two or more female characters. They're talking, not about men, but they talk about
right. So when I read the things that are offensive to people, like I try to listen as much to what's offensive to my female readership as I know that I am to my African-American readership. I had thought of it from almost specifically an African-American perspective. But then as I did school visits, I did one and this Latino boy came and I'm signing books and he just stood really close to me, you know, just like he just like Joanne'd me, just stood close to me. You know, is he going to ask something? He looked down and he never looked at me and he said, thank you for Ramon. And, you know, Ramon is like a tertiary character, you know, right. He's not one of the big ones. I didn't really do anything with him. And then I was like, oh, my goodness, there are kids that really care about yes. Ramon. So when I did school trip, I did it as more of an ensemble, like The Office.
Oh, that kid, how brave he must have been to stand there and get the chutzpah to say that to you.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, you talk about Dr. Phil moments where you just get choked up listening to kids or teachers will come crying because they're like, there's this kid in my class and he's never read anything. And he came to me with your book and he said, you know, Miss Caroline, promise me you'll read this over the weekend so we could talk about it on Monday.
Oh,
and she's like, he's giving me reading homework. And then she'll start crying as she's talking. And then I'm tearing up. I'm about to go on stage. And now I'm like,
right.
You know, but it's really amazing. You know, I tease Joanna, but you know, when you know what you mean to kids and what your stories mean.
Yeah.
I've seen her with a line of people waiting to get her book signed. You know,
waits in, by the way, he doesn't like come to the front. He actually waits in the line, which I just think is so dear.
Yeah, it's weird. Like that transition from the guy who waited to sometimes I'm embarrassed because like people's handlers will see me and they'll be like, oh, what are you doing online here? Yeah. And they'll grab my hand and come and like, you know, push some old lady out of the way and give me her spot. Here, how many books do you want? 15, 16? No, just they could just sign it to Jerry, you know, just like
Jerry like needs handlers when he goes to conferences because he gets
mobbed. I mean, I get it.
But it came overnight after 30 years of self-publishing.
Yeah. This is a little off topic from the point of the interview, but what is that like for you, that transition? I mean, you were in the industry for so long, self-publishing, publishing other people's stuff, making your own comics. And then to have this sudden, after so many years, you've won literally every award. Your book is the only one in history who's ever, you know, done all these things. And so you literally need, what's it called, a bouncer to like push people away. How do you process that in terms of the way the world has recognized your storytelling experience?
It's hard to process because when I would go to these events, you know, you get the catalog and I would mark off Jackie Woodson, 9 o'clock, Elizabeth Acevedo, 11 o'clock, you know, Zeta Elliott, 1:30, Joanna Hogue, 2 o'clock. And I would just have my whole thing. And there were times I would go and I would sit on the floor because you go to see Jason Reynolds.
Yeah.
You know, it's standing room. I like going to see Kwame Alexander because there's never anyone there. So I would get like the front row, a whole row to myself, you know, which is cool. So I always like going to his, you know, to go and see Raina Telgemeier or Cosby, you know, someone like that. And when New Kid came out in 2019, nobody knew who I was. New Kid came out February 5th of 2019. I won the Kirkus in October of 2019. Mm-hmm. So NCTE is normally November. Mm-hmm. So that was the first time that people kind of knew who I was. And I remember going to the Harper booth. I was supposed to sign at like 12 o'clock. And I get there and there's this line of people blocking my thing. And I'm like, oh man, this is my first big signing. Mm-hmm. And I'm probably next to like Jeff Kinney. And it's going to be like roller derby, like this line where the five people who want to see me can't get through. And so I'm like a little bummed out. So I go to the last woman online. I'm like, excuse me. She's like, yes. I said, who are you here to see? And she goes, we're here to see you. And I was like, are you kidding? This is my line? Like, I was stunned. I hadn't had anything like that. You know, I had done book signings where you hear someone open the door and you're like, finally a customer. And it's like the FedEx guy. And then after like an hour, you're like, okay, I'm going to pack up.
Totally.
Okay.
Like the only ones who came were the people who I specifically invited. Like, thanks, grandma. You know, and Jason Reynolds was signing and I was taking a photo of Jason Reynolds. And I look up and someone's taking a photo of me taking a photo of Jason Reynolds.
Meta.
And she said, while you're author stalking him, I'm author stalking you. I was like, wow, what's your name? And that's how Joanne and I met.
You know? Oh, man.
Paper on the side.
Okay, Jerry, I can only imagine as you're describing like the emotional, like existential process of going through this journey, especially given how long you'd self-published prior to this breakout moment, which I hope is such an encouragement to people who have been trying to get in the industry or just trying to tell their stories for so long. You don't hear as many stories like that. When you think about this idea of how do you build a story, has the way you've built a story been impacted by this kind of breakout success that you had? Is there a before and after, or things you learned or things you internalized or built into your process? Or is it like, hey, I've been here all along. Y'all are just new to the party.
No, there's definitely a learning experience. I know this is not video, but I'll show you. But like my self-published books, I probably did about 30 of them. And then even in college, making my comic books, like just superhero comics. I do feel like I felt a tremendous amount of love and respect and support. But I do know that it's kind of human nature to jump on the bandwagon, but then people also love to be the first ones to jump off.
Yeah, you know? That's real.
So they like to be like, well, you know, I like New Kid, but Class Act, blah, blah, blah. Or, you know, School Trip is good, but Dan Santat also did a book about kids going to Europe. So if you only have to read one of them, read his instead. It's never been my personality to phone something in. But I know now that the stakes are so high and I don't take being at this level for granted.
Right.
Even like with School Trip. So it's the third book in the New Kid saga. Mm-hmm. So I knew I had to make it different enough to make it worth reading, but the same enough. So people still felt like they were getting a New Kid book. So like I couldn't have had Jordan go to Paris by himself with his family, which initially I thought about, but then I knew people would say like, well, where's Drew? Where's Liam? Mm-hmm. You know,
you've built a universe. They want to live and have the comfort of the universe.
Right. So where the heck are they now? The best thing to do under the circumstances is to have the same characters, but change the setting. Changing the setting made it different enough so mm-hmm. that people wouldn't be like, once you read New Kid, you kind of read all of them.
Yeah.
The last thing is that I didn't want to go down the rabbit hole of like a TV show, right? The first season, the characters are kind of normal, you know, and you just really love those characters, the intricacies in the relationship. And after about season 8, one of them died and is a ghost and grandma is now a superhero and this one. And I'm like, yes. What did they do?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it's that the whole Fonzie jumping the shark thing. It's like
jumping the shark. Oh, Fonzie. You know? I'm so happy you mentioned that. Joanna doesn't know who the Fonz is. So
Let's just rub that in some more. Come on.
You know what I mean? Like, you don't want to get ridiculous and you took these characters that were kind of realistic. And now you feel like you always have to make it bigger and bigger and bigger. Yeah. Because one of the things that I like with my books is kind of taking a look at the mundane stuff.
Yeah.
Like riding the bus going back from Washington Heights to Riverdale.
Mm-hmm. Joanna and I talk about this a lot with our own stories too, is this idea of in the mundane, how do you build this emotional resonance in the everyday true telling of what it's like to be a kid? And there's this impulse to have like a ticking bomb, which of course can help in some ways, but to kind of over rotate towards this plot heavy, unrealistic, and then they're going to raise $1 billion. And so my question to you would be, how in the bus rides and in the body odor, do you feel like you are getting closer towards truth and emotional resonance for your characters?
Can I just build on that before you answer, Jerry? I think that's what I'm really struggling with is just exactly what Caroline said. I feel pressure. Because in a lot of the middle grade that I read, it's what Caroline said. There's like this some big thing. We're planning a huge party. We're going to raise $1 million. And we're snarky and we're spunky. And I wasn't that kid. I had big glasses and I had braces and I was going through a lot of stuff at home. And I was experiencing a lot of things, but I wasn't like planning to like escape my new home that I just moved to. That's one thing I love about your books is that they feel so real. And the characters are wrestling with multiple complex things, and they show up in these mundane, very believable things that like people would truly experience. And so, so that's the context for me. So I'm very curious how you do that and how you build tension with the emotional reality through these mundane life experiences.
So one of the things that I don't talk about often is that I think New Kid was rejected maybe 5, 6, 7 times. And then it was actually sold to another publisher who then kind of canceled it. And I had to buy it back.
No. You know?
Yeah, I literally had to cash in a 401k and buy it back. To then sell it.
They're all kicking themselves now.
And one of the things was nothing happens. And I think specifically when you are talking about an African-American story, there's always some horrific event that happens. I'll exaggerate a little bit, but it would be like Jordan finally gets to this prestigious private school. And they're like, oh, can you have a school shooter come in?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
You know?
KKK come and tag up the school or something.
Right. You know, and I'm like, no, that's not what I'm doing. And I had to really stand my ground and say, it's not that kind of book.
Right.
And so many of even the Black feel-good books, which as a kid, they never felt good. Suppose it was, you know, a little girl with her grandmother and they're going to enter a cookie baking contest. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always that scene where everything is fine. Oh, me and grandma, we're going to bake cookies. Sure. We're going to win this contest and go to Disney World. And then there's always that scene where they leave the oven open and then the curtains fly off the window.
Yeah, everything catches on fire.
Yes.
Catches on fire. And then the next thing, the house burned down. Grandma's in the hospital. And then the little girl is sitting there crying like, oh, what about the cookie contest? And then you see like the recipe fall down out of the sky. Like
the drama of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, my goodness. It's grandma's recipe. And then she bakes it and wins it. And then, you know, then grandma's recuperating in the hospital. She takes the ribbon. Hey, look, that's not a feel-good story because they still have nowhere to live. You know, grandma has smoke inhalation and second-degree burns. And traditionally, that's what Black stories have been.
Yeah.
And when I talk to adults, like if you go to ALA, 90% of the people in the audience are women. And I say, if the only books that you had as a little girl or that you could share with your daughters are books like Handmaid's Tale,
right,
then you know how I felt as a kid.
Yeah.
Like, yes, right. They're well-written, they're this, but what does that do? What kind of damage?
And right? How is it training the reader to believe that those are the stories that are worth telling?
Right. Yeah. And even now, when School Trip came out, I went on Goodreads. I know I'm not supposed to, but I did. And there's a woman that says, you know, she's a teacher. And she says, I don't think that my largely Black and brown, mostly poor kids are going to be able to relate to these kids going to Paris for a week. I'm like, how do you know what these kids will relate? So what, are you just going to give them police brutality books and slavery books and civil rights books and struggle in the projects books? You shouldn't even be their teacher if you're putting these house arrest bracelets around their ankles already.
Sorry, I'm jumping in. Back to what I was saying before, even though nothing happens, I just know that when I was reading it, I was like feeling New Kid in my soul. Every microaggression or every moment of joy, they felt really real and they felt very true to life. And so not that those really big, huge things to a horrendous and horrifying degree of frequency. I'm just wondering, what's your process in creating that resonance or that tension? Like, I couldn't put it down. I can't put any of them down. How do you do that in your stories when they are quiet stories where, quote unquote, nothing happens?
Because you have to, just keep your eyes and ears open. So I was in Nevada 2 days ago, and I'm at a hotel, and I'm outside, and I'm sketching. And there's one of those fountains that spurts the water out. Mm-hmm. And I look up, and there's a hummingbird drinking out of the fountain. And it was the coolest thing. I was, mesmerized. You have to remember those things that, yes, kids, some of them are addicted to social media and this and that, but let them see a rabbit run in front of them, you know? So I like to do stories that have the rabbits, not the fist fights. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In School Trip, I talk about how Jordan hated that Charlie Brown never got to kick the football. You know, and that was the kind of kid. And Caroline, you'll tell Joanna who Charlie Brown is.
I know he is.
That always made me sad as a kid.
Right. First of all, what I'm hearing is just so much observation everywhere you go, like the hummingbird or like something someone says to you at a school visit or, you know, just you're constantly taking in information and then finding ways to use. I mean, I think that's really poignant. Like the fact that a character hates that Charlie Brown can't kick the ball says so much
about their world.
About the character, right?
Yeah.
About showing, not telling. Yeah. How you said that.
Now, 15 years ago, maybe he would have had this soliloquy. I'm so sensitive and things make me sad all the time. But just him saying, Dad, I cried that night after watching Charlie Brown because I wanted him to kick the football so much. That shows his empathy.
Yeah.
You know, and that's such a big part of who he is. And then as I wrote the books more, I realized that although Drew is equally as nice, he's been hardened a little bit because he's bigger and darker and natural hair. Mm-hmm. So he's perceived differently than how Jordan is perceived. Mm-hmm. It was very important that there is no one way to be Black.
Yep.
Yeah. So
you have Jordan, you have Drew, you have Maury, whose dad is president of a Fortune 500 company. You know, you have Kirk around his block, and they're all very different.
Yes. And how you're showing and how you're building their characterization is in such a resonant way. You're not telling the reader what you just described about the Charlie Brown. So I have three kids, Jerry, and I have a second kiddo who doesn't like to admit when he's vulnerable, but he's the sweetest, gushiest little kid. We were watching a National Geographic movie or show of these baby lions, and you like become so invested in them. And one of the lions gets killed, this bird. And I look over at my little four-year-old, who has just tears streaming down his face, looks over at me, and he's like, "Mom, waddle's coming out of my eyes, and I don't understand why, but it's okay, just waddle." You know, he couldn't even get himself to admit he was crying, but just a moment like that, you know, made me think about like that right. versus telling your reader.
Right. So if you put that in a book, that is so much more powerful
right.
than any kind of description, because even he doesn't understand. He's like, "What is going on?" You know, as opposed to, "Oh, well, you know, he acts tough, but really deep right. down,
he's a big softie."
Right. So that's yeah. telling it. So there's three kids, and they came to see me at some library visit. And one of the kids had a sketchbook under his arm, but they're in the back just mean mugging. They're just like, right? So two of the friends go somewhere to get a snack, whatever. And the other kid runs up and he shows me his sketchbook while his two friends are gone. So if I have that scene, right? I don't have to say, "Oh, his friends think that cartooning is stupid. His friends think this, he's embarrassed." That little thing that actually happened, it tells everything.
Right.
Mm-hmm. He's looking around. There's like a bead of sweat coming down. So what should be this happy thing, because he's meeting his favorite author,
yeah.
he's stressed out mm-hmm. that he doesn't want his friends to come back. So yeah. then maybe he even interrupts the guy, like, okay. Yeah, that's good. Thank you. Can I email you? You know, he runs back, and then the kids come over with pizza, and they're like, "Yeah, let's get out of here. It's stupid." And he goes, "Yeah, you're right. It's stupid. Let's go."
Right.
It's the kind of scene that I would write.
I needed this, Jerry. I'm going to go back to my post-its and replan this whole stupid book. Wah, wah. You're the best. Before we get to our closing overshare section, what can people look for?
I just was in a book that Justin Reynolds wrote called House Party. Ooh. So I had like six-piece story, and that's a YA book. This is cool because I was always a big Marvel guy, and they asked me to write a foreword for this Fantastic Four book. This is from Penguin Classics, the Fantastic Four. So
how cool.
I think also September, Abrams was releasing Marvel Super Stories, and I did a six-page Black Panther story. Black Panther fights book banning.
Oh.
Then I have until July to hand in the first of my next three book series. It is a graphic novel. I'm signed for three books. They haven't made it public yet, but I'm sure by January it will be out. But all new characters, there'll be family, there'll be humor, there'll be no like tragic moment. And no one dying.
It's after my own heart. I don't want those things to happen.
I don't either.
It's like a Disney movie. My biggest fear in life is to be reincarnated as a Disney dad.
Oh, no.
You don't make it past the opening credits.
No, never.
It's like somewhere Tarzan's parents are hanging out with the Little Mermaid's mom.
And Nemo's mom.
And Nemo's whole 100 kids, his sister.
Oh, literally his whole world. It is a tragedy.
Even as an adult, I kept waiting for them to come up at the end like, "Hey, we were hiding under this rock." And then the credits went up and I was like, "Wait, they're all dead?"
You're like, "So this is a story of a slaughter. We opened with a slaughter."
Right.
Yes, that's wrong.
Disney would hire me to write a movie because I would have kids that went on an adventure and then got home in time to have dinner with their family.
Oh, that is such a good blurb. Like, right? A day of adventure at home in time to have a family dinner with all family members involved, present, yeah. alive, and accounted for.
Right.
Okay, Jerry, we cannot let you leave without closing and hearing about your overshare. We're at a happy hour. We want to know something juicy from your career. It could be something lovely, heartwarming. It could be something kind of horrifying, embarrassing. Anything on your mind that feels like a bit of an overshare in your very public world.
So as a reluctant reader, I didn't grow up meeting any authors, caring about any authors. I never went to a book signing. I didn't even know that a book birthday was a thing until I had kids of my own. And they're like, "Dad, we got to go to the store September 5th. And I'm thinking they mean GameStop. They're like, new Wimpy Kid is coming out. I'm like, you know when a book is coming out?
Oh, that's so awesome.
Like,
that's
what awesome. Is wrong with you? You know, or what is right with you? What was wrong with me? So I went to the Hudson Children's Book Festival years ago. It's been around like 15 years. So this is maybe 2008. And they always have a breakfast in the morning before the book festival. And I see this nice couple there, black couple. And I was like, oh, well, let's go have pancakes. We just shot the breeze talking about everything. And then I'm like, oh, you know, are you authors? You know, have a table? Oh, yeah, you know, I'm having this. Okay. And then I'm leaving. I said, and so, sir, what's your name again? He goes, I'm Walter Dean Myers. And I'm like, oh, okay, Mr. Myers, nice to meet you. And you're an author? Yep. Okay. And and I'm like, and your name, ma'am? She says, I'm Jacqueline Woodson.
No.
Oh my gosh, no.
No. Nope. Like,
okay, Walter Dean Myers and Jacqueline Woodson. All right, I'll remember that. Okay. All right, I'll remember you. And maybe I'll come by and visit your booth. Okay. All right, nice to meet you.
I mean, what? That had to be refreshing for them, though. Have a regular conversation.
I didn't join
them. Are you in relationship with Jacqueline or now?
Yeah, we're buddies now.
She's like, oh, you were that guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay. So I have a lot of stories of like, I remember going to BEA and I went to the Abrams booth and this guy was giving out these Wimpy Kid water bottles. And my sons loved them. And the guy working at Abrams was a really nice guy. And we talked about, I don't know, baseball or just something innocuous, right? He says, all right, I have to leave. I'm like, all right, dude, take it easy. You know, thanks for the water bottles. He's like, okay. And he leaves and someone comes over going and says, isn't Jeff Kenny wonderful?
It's just unreal.
I'm like, I don't know. Like, I never know. How would I know? That was him you've been talking to for the last 20 minutes.
God.
And I'm like, beep, that was Jeff Kenny? My kids are going to kill me.
They're going to kill you.
They're going to
kill you. Yeah. So most of the author stories I have, like, I had no idea.
That is so funny.
That's this how Jerry like, makes friends. He just has no idea who anyone is.
So humble bopping around. It's like, Joanna's going to be eating an ice cream cone next to Henry Winkler one day and be like,
yeah, exactly.
What's your name? What do you do?
Right, exactly. Right.
Oh, Jerry, thank you. So wonderful to actually get to meet the one and only Jerry Craft and get to hear your stories. And about, I feel like I'm always going to think about the hummingbird at the fountain.
I know.
And thinking about the little kid, Charlie Brown. Like, that's the magic of layering your stories. Thank you so much for sharing with us.
And that story that you told. About the lion,
the bird,
yes. And the tears. Yeah, that's beautiful.
It's a good one.
Are you going to sing happy birthday to me now?
Oh, no! Yeah. Oh, did sing it too? Let's do it.
Okay, ready? You're not ready for this, Jerry.
Okay, ready, set, go.
Happy birthday, dear Jerry.
You literally asked for this, Jerry. This is on you.
Happy birthday to you.
Wow.
And of course, live streamed on Photoshop. I mean, on Facebook.
Happy early birthday, Jerry.
If you enjoy this podcast, we would be so grateful if you would please take a moment to do any or all of the following things.
Follow or subscribe by tapping on the little plus sign or follow next to Kidlet Happy Hour in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
And while you're there, we would love if you could leave a rating, preferably one with 5 stars, as well as a review.
And don't forget about Patreon, where you can help support production costs, ask us questions, get even more overshares, and receive a delicious thank you treat from JK Chocolate. Check out patreon.com/kidlethappyhourpodcast.
Thank you so much for being here, and we hope to see you back for the next episode.